This is episode 293 of the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, Mr. Rob Staton, as we are leading up to the 2020 NFL draft. Rob, it's been a big offseason, and it's all kind of coming to a head here at the end of the week.
Yeah, it has. There's a lot for the Seahawks to get done. You know, they've still got to somehow try and find a solution for this defensive line and pass rush before the season starts. And I don't think they're going to be able to. They're not going to come out of the 2020 draft having fixed the pass rush. So they're still going to have a lot of work to do there, which is, you know, the exact same position they were in a year ago. They've got to go and get some good players as well. You know, this is a team that I thought they were going to be quite aggressive during free agency, and they weren't. And although the likes of Quinton Dunbar coming in will provide a bit of quality at cornerback, and they've really bolstered the offensive line depth, and let's not forget that Greg Olsen's there as well, and he's going to provide a nice weapon for Russell Wilson. This is still a team that needs a serious injection of talent, so this is a very important draft.
Yeah, and you know, we got a chance to watch some of the pre-draft press conference with John Schneider and Pete Carroll that happened on Tuesday. And one of the things coming out of that was questions around if the door is actually closed with Jadeveon Clowney. It sounds like it's not all the way closed, but gosh, it seems like it's really unlikely that Clowney is going to re-sign with the team. But when you take that into consideration, it does seem like they have the opportunity to make moves. And maybe it's just because, okay, this week is dedicated to the draft now and trying to get all their technology in order. They've had a draft pre-run on Monday. They're doing it again on Wednesday. And so maybe not a whole lot of time for contracts. We do see some of the guys signing their restricted free agent tenders and that sort of thing. But, you know, I guess if it's going to be something majorly detailed, it might have to be something that waits until after the week of the draft.
Yeah, I think they're still banking on Clowney coming back. You know, the language that John Schneider was using was very carefully. I think he'd planned that answer. So essentially, it was reinforcing what had been said to the media a couple of weeks ago, which is essentially, well, we made a good offer and we tried our best, but we have to move on, and we had to go and sign Benson Mayoa because we couldn't wait around any longer. But we still got great conversations, and it's been such a fantastic negotiation we've had, and we leave on good terms and all that, but we just had to move on. But we're still not closing the door on that. And then Pete Carroll jumps in going, we'll see what happens with Jadeveon Clowney and if he comes back or not. And, you know, and I still think they're banking on him coming back. I think that they believe that this is just a waiting game now, that it's a staring competition between the two. How much longer is Clowney going to wait? I think the Seahawks have determined, this is just my thought process on this, that there isn't anybody out there who's better than Clowney. And it's better just to sort of leave a bit of space, bit of cap space for him, than go and sign somebody else. And if that means waiting until August or September for him to have a meeting with the Cleveland Browns or the Tennessee Titans, just for them to say, well, actually, we're not going to give you $20 million a year, and then him sign a one-year deal or a two-year deal or whatever, I think that's their aim. I think that is their plan. I think that is what they hope to happen. And if it doesn't, they probably think they've got I'm going to call it a plan B, but it's probably plan F by now, because there have been other players that have moved on and other targets will have been lost by then. But I think they will see it that way. And there are going to be other options. The whole Yannick Ngakoue thing is still out there.
Yeah, that was an interesting piece this last week, with seeing Ngakoue on Twitter going after one of the Jaguars front office guys. And what was he, like the son of the owner or something like that? And
yes, Tony Khan, I think his name is, yeah.
Just going back and forth. And interesting that the Jaguars exec that he's going after is saying, you know, we'll trade you when we get a good offer. And right now you're really not making a case by going with this publicly on Twitter.
No. And now that the time is running out, really, for any kind of deal to be done there, because you just have to, it just doesn't make any sense, really. How are you going to come to terms with it on a deal with Jacksonville, then negotiate a new contract with Yannick Ngakoue, and then organize a medical test for him to, you know, so that he can actually ratify the trade? All of that has to happen before the draft,
right,
for it to be include a 2020 draft pick. So it seems very unlikely that he's going to be dealt before the draft, but then it still feels very likely that he is going to leave Jacksonville. And that argument with Tony Khan is a good reason why. And you just wonder whether or not in a couple of months' time, Jacksonville will take whatever the best offer is for Ngakoue, and they will draw a line under it and move on. And that could create another situation whereby you could get him at a cheaper price than expected, in much the way that Jadeveon Clowney was acquired for a cheaper price a year ago. So there are still options out there. I think the problem is, and this is why, you know, some smart guy somewhere will say, if the Seahawks end up sorting this out and sign a couple of pass rushers or re-sign Clowney, that they did the right thing in waiting this out. My argument to that would be, that's all well and good to look at it positively like that in hindsight, but they've seriously run the risk of going into next season with an even worse pass rush than one of the most hopeless pass rushers in the league next year. And that warrants some critiquing, even if it ends up working out all well and good in the end.
Low confidence in Bruce Irvin and Benson Mayoa. You're such a downer on this, Rob.
Well, listen, and these two guys, we're talking about a 29-year-old who, yeah, he had 7 sacks last year, but I think he had 1 sack 2 previous years. And Bruce, everybody loves Bruce. Bruce is going to be 34 this year.
Yeah.
You know, eventually there's going to be a time when Bruce is not going to be the quick twitch athlete that he's known as. And, you know, the Seahawks didn't want to use him as a pass rusher when he was here last time and he was in his 20s. So, you know, they used him as a linebacker. They acquired Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril a year after drafting Bruce Irvin to pass rush, and then they went and drafted Frank Clark and they kept him at linebacker. So, my optimism for these two being the answer is probably about as it's similar, maybe a little better than the optimism I had that Cassius Marsh and Jacob Martin were going to be the answer last year.
Yeah, that was probably not the best placed hope looking back to last year, although I think we did think that Ziggy was, you know, that he could potentially show something. But yeah, you know, part of me with the pass rush, I kind of have resigned myself to the fact that, well, maybe they're looking at it like it can't really get any worse than last year. And it has the potential to get worse. But, you know, there's just not that much room to get worse. And so why not focus on some of these other areas? But
can I just say on that? You're absolutely right. It can't get much worse. But it can get worse enough to prevent the Seahawks making a playoff.
Yes.
Or it can get worse enough so that in a wild card game or a divisional round game, it'll just be Groundhog Day.
Yeah. Well, then think back to the 2012 season, you know, when Chris Clemens went down and there goes your pass rush. So, yeah.
Well, it's been feeling like it's 2012 for 2 years now. And it's like, you know, you can't keep saying that at the end of every divisional playoff loss. You know, eventually it has to be 2013.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think this year was supposed to be the year, but I have to say that the way things are going, it looks like it may be another off season yet.
Well, one of the things that came out of this press conference that was kind of intriguing to me, it was the idea of all this practicing around leading up to the draft, and the fact that John Schneider, Rob, is practicing moving up from pick number 27 to moving up to number 11 with the Jets. I that was my favorite piece of news out of this entire press conference.
Yeah, I enjoyed hearing that as well. I enjoyed seeing John's. I liked when John leaned into the camera, and sort of had a grin on his face as if he was going to, you know, he'd got something cooked, a great answer cooked up. So, but when he was preparing to tell people he was not going to answer their questions, he would lean in and have a bit of a laugh and a joke to himself, and he did that with that as well when he talked about moving up to number 11. It's highly unlikely, let's just say that the Seahawks will move up. They're much more likely to move down. But I tell you one thing about the press conference, that I don't know if you picked up on this as well, Brandon, that I thought was very interesting, was their talk of admitting, really, that it's going to be very hard for rookies to come in and have an impact this year because of what is going on.
Yeah.
And that they need to identify the certain types of players who may be best prepared to come in and have an impact. Now, some of the players you draft, and this is the same any year, it's not just this year, are brought in to develop anyway. They're not expected to start immediately. There's always going to be those types. So there will be those athletic upside guys that they draft in a draft who are backups and will have a chance to compete eventually, but you don't really have high hope of them starting in the immediate first year in the league. But I do think they're going to target certain players who are maybe a little bit older, who are maybe already filled out a little bit more physically, that are more pro-ready, if that makes any sense, and have maybe impressed them in meetings and have been able to offer a level of football IQ that separates them from other players. But then I think other teams will be looking for that as well. But it does mean that it could steer them in a certain direction. And the other thing about it was that they were talking about having grown men on the offensive line and how difficult it is to find offensive linemen, which is something we've often talked about, something I've written about an awful lot in the blog, and that was reiterated again today. And it makes me wonder a little bit how they're going to approach the offensive line in this draft, because there are definitely some really good offensive line options. But the fact they've signed so many players and they're talking that way, and also John made a very interesting comment that he said what they've been able to do on the offensive line can help them concentrate on best player available
right
in the draft, in the first pick, which made me think that if they hadn't done all this, they would have probably felt obliged to go O-line. But now they have a degree of freedom, which could mean anything really, I suppose. But for me, I read that as, well, it could mean that they're going to go for a skill position player first up, because the real quality for the real range for defensive players is probably going to be those two round two picks, and going into round three if they move down and get another third round pick.
Well, it does make a lot of sense to me, because one of the things John Schneider also said in the press conference was, when talking about offensive line, he said they hit on 1, 2, and 3 in free agency for guys that they were targeting, and they were targeting offensive line and talking about Brandon Schell, BJ Finney, Abuehi, Warmack. He threw in there too, but I think Abuehi was one of those three where that's who they were targeting. And so it has been more of an offensive forward targeting and building around Russell Wilson. So if they are going for weapons, that would be the way to go, I think, in the first round, and keeping it open to take one of those weapons with their first pick, whether that first pick is in the first round or early in the second after they trade down. The other interesting thing, you brought it up too, about the mentality of certain guys. They're looking for a certain type of makeup from a guy. And one of the ways to tell it is being in the type of situation. They said that they're missing that piece of being able to bring them into their own environment and get the feedback from the cooks that are there, the equipment guy who's on staff there. But then you get some other information that you wouldn't necessarily know. And that's how seriously they're taking this opportunity. You know, he said that they've talked to guys from everyone who's worn a tie, you know, on screen to do the interview with them, to another guy who was laying in bed and watching TV during their interview with them. And, you know, if that's the range of players that you're going to look for, you're going to want to take the guy who's really taking this type of opportunity seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the great thing about being able to do the meetings for the teams, is they can learn a lot more. This is the thing, is, you know, when, you know, I'm writing a blog, or you get these people who write articles, or you essentially get Twitter analysts now, you know, the people who only really do any sort of talking about the draft or analysis via the form of 220 characters or a short video. And none of us can see what is actually going on in these meetings. If I was a GM, and if you were a GM or a scout or whatever, sitting in one of these meetings, and you switched the FaceTime video on and the guy was there in, you know, a vest and shorts, laying in bed watching Tiger King, then, you know, I would come away afterwards and I would say to you, my pro director of personnel, Brandon, or whatever, I'd say, what was that all about? You know, how could he potentially, you know, I want someone who's taking this seriously.
Yeah.
And then you'll get another player. I seem to recall Daniel Jeremiah saying that when he was on the plane to Mobile for the Senior Bowl, that he bumped into Bradley and I, who was wearing a full suit and was treating it like a business, you know, meeting, that he was going to the Senior Bowl. And I can imagine Bradley and I, if they had a FaceTime meeting with him, I don't know if they did or not, sitting there in a shirt and tie with his hair nicely combed. I can imagine that. And I can imagine, I'm not going to name any names, but I can think of a few players who may well have taken the opposite way through with that. I think just quickly on the Seahawks overall, though, what they need to do is, on their overall plan, so they've got very few players signed beyond next season. They've got, like, basically Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner, who are signed to long-term contracts, and everybody else is on a short-term deal, which I know they like, and they want that competition, and they want guys with a bit to prove, and they want guys to go after it and earn those new contracts and stuff like that. That's fine. And if you're going to keep bringing players in with the idea of developing them and they back themselves, we're going to go and get our guys, we're going to take guys earlier in the draft than maybe other people would, we're going to bring them in, we're going to draft them, we're going to develop them. That's fine. But eventually you do have to actually develop these players. And this has been the problem for the last sort of few drafts, really. There hasn't been enough players who've gone from, you know, coming in as mid-round picks or even high-round picks and then actually becoming mainstays and part of the core of the team. If you actually to write down Seattle's core group of players right now, very few of them have actually been drafted by the Seahawks. They've been signed or they're part of the old guard, you know, that 2010, 11, 12 initial burst of players that they brought in. And if you bring guys in like Marquise Blair and LJ Collier, and this is the, you know, the thing that I would say about these two guys in particular, they were their first two picks last year. Yet going into their second year in the league, you're not expecting them to start. I mean, like the two safeties at the minute are going to be Quandre Diggs and Bradley McDougald. That's what you would go into camp thinking, and I suspect that's what it will be on week one, whenever week one happens. And at defensive end, I wouldn't expect LJ Collier to be starting there either.
Right.
Now, you've got to be, if you're picking guys in the top 50 like those two, they have to be starting in year two or projected starters, or you have to have a degree of confidence that they're going to do that. And this is the big problem. It's not so much the players that they've drafted necessarily, it's that, you know, it's a combination of the players you're drafting and then your inability to develop them into your key players. You trade Frank Clark, who's a success story, but then the players that you're sort of pushing to replace him, you need to develop those guys to pick up the slack, and they've not done that over the last few years. They haven't developed enough players, and John Schneider was very right to say, with the players they acquire, with the players they draft, and then the development side of things, it all has to be better.
Well, and that might just be, I'm wondering if they changed their approach at all going into this year, knowing that it could be a lost season for a lot of these rookies. You know, could you see late round picks get traded for guys who can come in and have an immediate impact? You know, we talked about Ngakoue, but there is another Jaguars player who is kind of linked to the Seahawks this week too, and that was Leonard Fournette. So if a guy like Fournette's available at running back, you know, depending on what the situation is with Chris Carson, with Rashad Penny, you know, do you give up a late round pick, fifth, sixth, or whatever, maybe even a fourth for a guy like Fournette, for a guy who can come in, and yes, he's only got 1 year left on his deal, but a guy that you know is going to have an impact next year versus a guy who, at, you know, you're talking fourth round and beyond pick, probably just going to be on the roster and not really see the field a whole lot.
I think this is definitely something that I hope they will consider, and I think a lot of teams will, because that's absolutely right. You know, if you can bring players in, and this, you know, team building, it's not all just about the draft. It's about everything that you do. And, you know, the Seahawks team that won the Super Bowl was built on good drafting, intelligent free agent acquisitions that didn't cost an arm and a leg, and then trades and smart deals. I mean, like, no trade has been more significant than the Marshawn Lynch trade,
yeah,
which was for a fourth round pick. They got Chris Clemens for a ham sandwich. You know, it's those kind of smart trades for veterans who can really come in and have an impact for you, that can provide toughness and leadership, that you can get for throwaway late round picks that can really help you develop your team. The Seahawks last year, two of their best players were Jadeveon Clowney for a third round pick and Quandre Diggs for a fifth round pick. You know, that's the kind of addition. They've already traded for Quinton Dunbar, who's in that kind of bracket. It's those kind of deals that help tip you towards success along with good drafting. So if they can hit a few more early round picks, if they can develop the players from last year a bit better than they did, because as I mentioned, you know, DK Metcalf was superb, but Collier, Blair didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the year, Cody Barton was being blocked by Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, you've got to get those players doing a bit more this year. And is there a day three pick that you can swap for some veteran out there of a, you know, I don't think, I think running back of all positions is probably the easiest one to pick up, actually. So mm-hmm. I'm not sure whether Fournette is the kind of guy that go after, but if there's a defensive lineman out there or another defensive back or something like that, that could go and get, who could really come in and tip the scales towards the Seahawks and provide a big impact there, then yeah, definitely that could be a really smart move.
Well, I do want to get into more of your thoughts on the draft. But before we do that, I want to throw out there that one of our friends of the show, MK Cornfield, she's She's part of this group that doesn't want to miss out on booing the commissioner as part of the opening round of the draft. And so the Pardon My Take community is putting together a deal for all of those fans who don't want to miss out on the booing. And so in terms of the Seahawks group that's putting that together, MK, she still needs people to fill out the 100-person Seahawks fan group. So find her on Twitter. She's at ELLO, the letter M, letter K, and hit her up on Twitter and be part of that group.
I like the fact that he's got this self-depreciating humor and that we are going to have virtual booing.
Yeah.
I think that's a mark of the man, really, that, you know, he's taking it in this kind of spirit. And I think it is a tradition that I'm glad will continue this year.
Well, getting into your latest post up at Seahawks Draft Blog, Rob, and you put out your 2020 draft guide. And one of the I appreciated the fact that you did this because it made for great content for me over at Field Goals. I had on EJ Snyder from Windy City Gridiron, who's their senior draft analyst for the Bears. And he's a guy who's just been breaking down tape, you know, these past few months. And we wanted to kind of go through your board and look for potential impact players for the Seahawks. So we got a chance to do that. But I kind of felt bad going into it, too, because I didn't really have it straight from you exactly how you laid out this Seahawks draft board round 1 through 7 and how you kind of organized it. And so I didn't have that piece going into it. So I want to hear from you kind of what went into building this up for how you see this draft going for Seattle.
Yeah, I think anytime I'm glad that you've given me the opportunity to do that because I posted a 4,300 word draft preview for the Seahawks today, and I saw that link was posted on the Reddit, and the first comment in the section was, "Why is Joe Burrow listed on the board?" And I was like, "I've written 4,300 words, you know, like who cares, you know?" So what I did with the board was it's a mix between a Seahawks board and just the fact that I didn't want to leave off, you know, the quarterback grid completely. So it's kind of a mix of my own views on certain players.
Well, and the way that I read that, Rob, is if Joe Burrow is there when the Seahawks pick, then they should take him.
Yeah, I mean, it was just that, you know, it's like if I was putting a board together, if I was drafting this draft for the Seahawks, then I wouldn't be sort of worrying about the quarterbacks at all, really, you know, right, until much later in the draft. But, you know, I just wanted to, it felt weird not having any column for the QBs. And, I thought I've got to have Burrow in there at the top, you know, through the number one overall pick. So I just included that there. So it's a mix of my own views on certain players and generally a board for the Seahawks. So, you know, for the cornerbacks, I've not included the guys who have, you know, sub 32 inch arms. There's probably a couple of nickel cornerbacks in there that I included. I actually would like to update the board. I've deleted the file, so I can't update. There are a few of the names that I would like to add on there, and I can't be bothered to go and rewrite the whole damn thing again. So I'm leaving it as is. But if you read the draft guide, there's a few extra names on there that I would have included as I was building that thing. And there's about 160 players on the board, and the Seahawks, I think John Schneider has already said that they'll only have about 120 on their board. So many of these players will not be on there. I mean, it could be it's little things like I've got red. The players that are in red are injury concerns. A lot of those players might not be on Seattle's board. They might just go, no, you know, for example, Terrell Lewis at Alabama. There's a lot of talk that certain teams like half the league have not got him on their board because of injury concerns. He might not be there. So when you start ticking players off like that, then actually you can get down to 120 quite easily.
And I am glad that you noted those players in red, too, because it is helpful to try and guess on why certain players might be in a certain spot. Although, you know, Robert Hunt is a guy that a lot of people were thinking later on, the rankings on him are relatively low. But gosh, when you talk about the type of backstory that Robert Hunt has and you have him listed at guard here, the Seahawks, you know, they've been loading up on guards. But man, when I hear Robert Hunt's story and how he got into football, I mean, there's a guy where I know if no matter how the offseason goes, he's going to take this opportunity seriously just based on the few interviews that I've seen with him. The NFL put out a piece on him, and this is a guy who loves football, and you don't question that.
Yeah, and I think this is, you know, that people like to talk about adversity and the Seahawks, and, you know, I'm not trying to weigh off one man's struggle against another's. I really hope that that's not what people think I'm doing with this. But you often see people say, for example, that Yiti Gross Martos is ideal Seahawks because of the tragic events of his childhood. Mm-hmm. And there was absolutely no doubt that that was harrowing. It's a very emotional story to hear. And, you know, anybody who hears that, their thoughts, of course, would be with Yiti Gross Martos. And I wish him well for his career. I certainly do, because he's gone through a lot there. But real, you know, this sort of there's different kinds of advert. There's sort of like having tragedies in your life, and there is saying, I am going to have a football career if it's the last thing I do. And does that make sense? Am I making myself clear on that? Because people can have tragedies in life, but if they're naturally very athletic and talented and get recruited by teams like Penn State as 4-star, 5-star recruits, have a fairly decent career at Penn State, that's a little bit different than the kind of thing that Robert Hunt's talking about. You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I absolutely do, especially when you consider, I mean, yes, Gross Matos has had tragedy in his life and he's had to overcome things, but it's more of doing rather than overcoming. And I think that's where the category that Hunt is in with his situation is that, you know, he was from a family that, you know, was just scraping by and not even, you know, he talked about just fighting to get $30 together to try and get into a football camp. And he went out and was raking lawns and, you know, putting in that effort to just to pull together $22 and still made the effort and said, oh, well, you know, I'm going to at least go and see if this will get me in the door. It got him in the door. And still he's looking around at guys that have the better shoes. They have all the gear. And, you know, it's even with that, I know what it was like to grow up poor, Rob. And so I can just put myself in his shoes and look around and I know that seeing that sort of thing, it can bring you down and go, you know what, I really don't belong here. But to be able to fight through something like that, to fight through those types of feelings of maybe I don't belong here, but this is what I love and it is what I want to do. The fact that he fought through that, it shows me a whole lot more in that situation.
That, you know, when the Seahawks talk about grit, that's grit. That's how you would define it. It's making it happen. It's sort of getting up every day and saying, I am going to do this. And I, you know, I'm in a one trap mind of succeeding and now getting to be amongst the best. Robert Hunt is a fantastic, I listed him as a guard, by the way, because I think he can be an elite guard, but I think he can be a really good tackle. So I think wherever you draft him, it's one of those whereby if you need a tackle, he can be a really good tackle for you. If you have the ability to kick him inside to guard, I think he can be one of the best in the league. So, I think he can be Marshall Yander good. I mean, he's really, really, really good. So I think that what I was trying to, the point I was making with the Hunt and the Gross Martos thing is that when you're actually looking for the guys that are the gritty ones, it's to look for the stories like the Hunts as often as you can. That's kind of what I'm going for there.
Yeah, well, and the Gross Matos story, it's what, similar to, think of Amara Darbo, right? The all the stuff that he had to go through in his youth, and he, you know, it was a struggle when he was young and impacted his life in a significant way, but it's the fighting through some of the adversity, maybe later on in life, or even with the injuries, you know, you can look at that too, and with the injury rate in the NFL being what it is, and saying that, hey, here's somebody in college who had a devastating injury and they loved the game enough that they were going to fight through that injury and come back and try and be 100%. And if they showed that, then I think that's an additional check in the box for the type of grittiness that the Seahawks look for.
Yeah. And look, Hunt's a really good player, really, really good player. And I would not be surprised at all if the Seahawks took him quite early, because as we were talking about earlier, John Schneider talks about having grown men. He's a little bit older. He's going to be 24 this year. He's already very physically mature. He's a very intelligent guy. I interviewed him a couple of weeks ago. Very great personality. Great to talk to. Will have no issues fitting in. And I just feel like he's the kind of guy that they could go for. Now, if they go for offensive line early, And then you run into there's all sorts of different things. There's a lot of options for the Seahawks this year. So what do they need? If they take a tackle early, do they need someone who can compete with Brandon Shell to be a really good right tackle this year? Or do they need somebody who can essentially be redshirted and eventually maybe replace Dwayne Brown? How early do you take a guy to be a redshirt behind Dwayne Brown? Do you want impact from your first pick? Or do you want somebody who can be a long-term successor potentially 1, 2, 3 years down the line? You know, these are the kind of questions you ultimately have to ask. And with Robert Hunt, I think that is, if you're drafting him, you're saying, we like Brandon Shell, but we want somebody else who can push him there. And that is the one position that they haven't done anything other than sign Shell. They haven't really got somebody who could say very confidently that person could start at right tackle other than Shell. They've only got people who might be able to do it. So I think that Hunt could be an option, but then so could Isaiah Wilson, so could Austin Jackson, Ezra Cleveland could be, you know, Matt Peart, Sadiq Charles. There's all sorts of players they could go for there, but Robert Hunt definitely a good option for them.
Well, I want to look at this first round or first pick more a little bit, Rob, and I think the idea of finding a weapon for Russell Wilson is something that's really appealing to me, especially just going after a player that you think can be an impact right now with the Seahawks kind of being in that window of, you know, we want the Seahawks to go to the Super Bowl this year. And with Russell Wilson in his prime, I think going after a weapon in some way makes a lot of sense early on. With that in mind, where does that lead you when you're thinking about the Seahawks first pick?
I think there's sort of a group of players that really makes sense. So obviously at the wide receiver position, you've got, and if people go on the blog and look at the board, the idea of the horizontal board is to try and sort of find where the shelves are, you know, where does the talent drop? And there's a really long list of wide receivers, much longer than any other position. So you've got to determine, do you want to have a receiver? Do you want to go and take Jalen Reagor, who's really explosive and has got a bit of Deebo Samuel to him, who's a really good red zone threat, can be a kick returner as well? Do you want to go for someone like that in the first round? Justin Jefferson with his consistency and the catching percentage that he has and the contested catching percentage that he's got? Do you want to go for massive upside with Chase Claypool or Denzel Mims? Do you want like a smaller, more diminutive dynamic type like KJ Hamler or Brandon Ayuk, who's like run after the catch and can accelerate really quickly? Do you want to go for a guy like that? Or are you willing to sort of wait till round two when you might be able to go to Bryan Edwards, who for me is as good as any of the other receivers I've just talked about? It's just simply he's had a really stalling offseason with injuries and stuff like that, not being able to go to the Senior Bowl, not being able to go to the Combine. Well, he set all the records at South Carolina and is a terrific, really quality receiver who, if you get him at the end of round two or even early round three, that's a massive steal. And then you get down the list and there's a long list of players they could go for there at receiver, and they've signed Philip Dorsett, which is important to remember. And then you've got the running back class, and they need to come out of this draft with a running back. At some point, they have to draft a running back. Now, Twitter will explode if they take one with the first pick, whether that's in the first round
or second round. Early. Right, yeah. With their first pick, if it's running back, Twitter will explode. I don't think that's a hot take.
and there's going to be all of this sort of snarky and sarcastic stuff that goes on usually.
But the thing is, Rob, when I think about that, there's four guys that I really like. I've watched Jonathan Taylor. I really like him. I watched Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He's great. You know, I was watching J.K. Dobbins, holy smokes, and DeAndre Swift, too. I mean, and he might be the number one guy. So, gosh, I mean, they all seem like impact players that can come in. And even if it's at the end of the first round or early second, I think you're going to end up paying them less than if you do the 1 year of Leonard Fournette.
I think your best chance to get a really good player, and I'm talking like a top 20 player in this draft, is with the running backs. Because if Jonathan Taylor's still there, he's one of the 20 best players in this draft. And if he's still there at 27 or even 30 or 35, it's simply because of the position that he plays. It's because teams are not valuing running backs that highly these days. And, you know, sometimes you do have to zig where others zag. You know, if teams are devaluing this position, where can you find an advantage? Go and get the best guy at this particular position. And I think we need to get, look, I don't think the Seahawks view first round picks the same way that maybe fans do. I think fans view first round picks or early round picks as if you don't get an 8-year starter in your team out of that pick, then it's a bad pick. Whereas I think the Seahawks view it more like you're picking at the end of round one every year. You've got this guy for 4 to 5 years, and it's like a signing. It's it's like a free agent addition. You've got them for 4 or 5 years. Let's get the most out of that particular contract. And if they earn a second one, great. But if not, or just go and get somebody else. I think that's how they view it. And I think that's how teams should generally view it, apart from the obvious, the franchise. If you're just a franchise quarterback, you're not planning to have them for 5 years. You're planning to have them for a lot longer than that. Franchise tackle or pass rusher or something. But with certain positions, you are sort of thinking short term. And they need to add a running back. You know, who knows when Rashad Penny's going to be ready? Who knows what's happening with Chris Carson? You know, he had a serious hip injury as well. So you've got two guys that are injured there. Chris Carson's in a contract year. Chris Carson's not been able to stay healthy in college or in the NFL. You know, you've got Travis Homer on the roster, and bless him, he did his best, but they can't win with Travis Homer. You know, their offense is set up to have a productive running game, and teams are just teeing off on Russell Wilson at the end of the season without any real genuine running threat. They need to get a running back from this draft. They need to come out with one. And if the difference is you get a top 20 player between 27 and 35 and it's Jonathan Taylor or Big Clyde, or if you end up waiting and you're getting, I don't know, a much lesser player in round 6, a Michael Warren type or something like that, because I think there is a massive drop-off after the top 5, it's at least worth considering. And Jonathan Taylor is desperate to be a Seahawk. I mean, I won't be surprised to find out if he's got a Seahawks tattoo. Right. I mean, I posted it on Twitter this week because I noticed in the Pro Football Talk interview that he'd been very positive about the Seahawks, kept bringing them up unprompted. And then I watched the interview that he did with Colin Coward yesterday, and I thought, I'm going to watch this specifically to see if he brings up the Seahawks unprompted again, because I know he did it last time. And lo and behold, Coward asks me about the Patriots and he brings up the Seahawks immediately. He changes. And I thought, I'm going to put this out there. I'm going to make this into a 1 minute video and I'm going to stick it out there because this guy wants to be a Seahawk. And I think fans will like to see that, you know. And I just figured, anyway, it exploded. You know, it's had thousands of likes and stuff like this. Amongst them is Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson has liked the tweet.
Yeah.
So I just find that, you know, I find that funny. And I quite like the idea of, one, getting a top 20 talent, one, that top 20 talent actually being desperate to play for the Seahawks. Russell Wilson having a highly talented, explosive, fast, perfect fit for the offense running back for the next 4 to 5 years of his peak, that can really take him through that time without any real pressure to pay Chris Carson then, or find a solution with Rashad Penny, or even pay Jonathan Taylor in 5 years. You could just move on if you wanted to. But, you know, this is a 5-year window for Russell at his best. Go and get him somebody like that. And that could be a real advantage. But you can also make a strong case for some of those receivers as well. But, you know, as much as I like Jalen Reagor and Denzel Mims and Brandon Ayuk and Chase Claypool, Jonathan Taylor and Clyde Edwards-Helaire are just better players.
When I look at the receivers, gosh, there are guys that excite me, and probably just the fact that a guy like Bryan Edwards might be available as a third round player at the back end of the second round is pretty exciting. So when I look down the list too, and guys in round 6, I think there might even be a guy there who can come in and be your number 4 wide receiver right away. And really that's what we're talking about here, is because they have the number 1, 2, 3 guys. And, you know, that's not even including David Moore, who is signed to come back this year. So, and he's going to be fighting for that number 4 spot. So you could find a guy who could be that number 4 receiver, and maybe not necessarily early on in the draft. So just the amount of depth there. And yeah, if people go to your website, Rob, and just look at the list, I mean, it's staggering, the depth of actual Seahawks guys.
Yeah, it's great. And just a quick final point on this, you know, you've got a third round comp pick right at the end of round 3, you know, there's going to be somebody available in that range, you know, whether it's a Devin Duvernay at Texas, a Van Jefferson, you know, a Lynn Bowden or somebody like that.
Oh, Lynn Bowden. That's a guy that got, when I think of a guy who could come in and make an impact in terms of his special teams ability, you know, running jet sweeps. I mean, that's a guy that I look for. And the fact that, yeah, a fourth round guy or a third round comp pick guy, a guy who can throw the football even, I'd take Lynn Bowden over some of these guys who people have been talking about as late round quarterback picks for the Seahawks.
Exactly. You know, this is kind of what I'm talking about. And you know, we know the Seahawks love a fourth round receiver. You know, could they possibly trade back a little bit from that third? get him in the fourth. I don't know. I mean, look, they're going to know where these guys are going to fall. A lot of the guys, I'm sorry, it might go a little bit early. But for me, if you could get Brian Edwards, let's say, at 59, when is it the pick? 59 and 64. So if you could get Brian Edwards there, and then you get a Jonathan Taylor or a Clyde with your first pick after trading down, and let's say that you trade down into a range where you can maybe get another third round pick, and then you can get a defensive tackle and another defensive lineman. If you feel good about your offensive line because you've made all of these moves in free agency, then you're sort of saying, well, you're adding some real talent there. You've got a really good receiver. You've got a running back that you can really believe in. You've got one of the 20 best players in the draft if you get Taylor or Edwards-Helaire. You're going to be picking in the range where you're going to go after your defensive lineman. You know, it's that kind of late second, early third when the Devon Hamilton's going to come off the board, or a Jabari Zuniga, or a Darrell Taylor, or somebody like that. You know, they seem to be in that kind of range. Now, Taylor's a big injury question mark. I mean, I could see him, you know, being way off. I think we talked about this last time. He could go right down the board because of injuries. But then, you know, I read a piece that Bob McGinn was talking about, speaking to his anonymous scout sources this week, and someone compared him to Frank Clark. So, you know, what happened in 2015? A five-star talent with all the physical skills in the world drops to the late second round. And the Seahawks see an opportunity with Big Frank and go and take him, and they end up getting a really good pick. Could they sort of think, they may well think, Darrell Taylor would have been a first-round pick if he'd have been healthy and consistent and productive. If he's there in round two or round three or round four, whatever, do they think this is history repeating? We can go and get the next Frank Clark. I don't know. You know, this is what I'm talking about here, is that you can go and get some good players. And maybe this is what John Schneider was kind of just revealing a little bit to us in that press conference, is they now have the flexibility to do that because of the moves they've made on the offensive line already in free agency.
Well, I do want to talk a little bit about some of these interior defensive linemen, because you threw out Devon Hamilton, and I'm kind of curious. It doesn't feel like a need for the Seahawks, but is he the type of talent that you could see if he was available late in the second round? Is he a guy that the Seahawks, they might just say, you know what, this is a guy who from the interior can also give pass rush. He's a big guy. This is a talent that we can't pass up on at this point.
Yeah, I think they need to get a defensive tackle from this draft. I think that Reed has been re-signed, and obviously there's Puna in there, but they need another guy in there that they can really feel good about. Now, that could happen after the draft. You know, we've seen them in many, many years. For many years now, they go and get a cheap veteran, don't they? Or, you know, even a well-known veteran. They've done that in the past too. Bring them in, plug them in, one-year contract, you know, and just move on from that. They could definitely do that. But I think there are enough defensive tackles in this draft where you could say, no, go and get one. Go and get a young partner in crime for Jaron Reed who can really provide you some value. And the thing about Devon Hamilton is he ticks so many boxes. So people just write him off as a nose tackle because he's 320 pounds and 6 foot four. But he had 10 and a half tackles for a loss last season, which is an incredible amount for a defensive tackle. You don't often see defensive tackles with 10 and a half TFLs. He had six sacks. I mean, there are not many 320 pound defensive tackles who have six sacks. Yes, he played with Chase Young, so you have to sort of mention that, and he will have got a lot of attention, but it's still very hard to rush from the interior at that size and have that production, even if you are playing with Chase Young. When you actually watch the tape, he knifes through gaps as well as he yankers. So you're now talking about 6 foot four, 320 pound, 33-inch arm guy who can do both pass rushing and hold the point. And when I sort of think about guys like that, I'm thinking Kawan Short. You know, I'm thinking guys who have got the size and can do all of those things, but can also get to the quarterback. And if the Seahawks could have somebody like that who can create pressure from the interior and also play stout and improve the run defense, and you've got another guy like that in Jaron Reed, and then you've got Puna rotating in, that improves your defensive line in a massive way for me, especially if you're going to need that interior pressure if you've not got the best edge rushers. And, you know, Devon Hamilton also went to the Senior Bowl. He won 73% of his one-on-ones, according to Pro Football Focus. And I have watched every one of his snaps, and I can vouch for that. The only player that beat him is Zach Bourne, who's 238 pounds rushing the edge against, you know, offensive lineman 1v1. Zach Bourne's going to win that every day, because he's rushing in space with no other players on the field competing. You know, for Devon Hamilton to win inside 73% of the time, that was the most impressive performance of the Senior Bowl. And we know that the Seahawks pay close attention to stuff like that. His pass rush win percentage is better than Ed Oliver's was a year ago and Jeffrey Simmons.
Oh, wow.
Better than those two guys. And it's the same as Ross Blacklock. He's got the exact same pass rush win percentage as Ross Blacklock, who people call a first round three technique at 290 pounds. He's 30 pounds lighter and has the same pass rush win percentage. So, look, for me, Devon Hamilton's a really good player. I think I'll give him a second round grade. I think that's the range. And if they could get him and pair him with Reed, that's good. But there's also Leckie Fatu that they could go for. Raekwon Davis, who I interviewed. Justin Madubuike, who's got some injury flags, a few other issues. You know, I'd like to see them come out of this draft. Marlon Davison, if they kick him aside. I'd like to see them come out of this draft with one defensive tackle.
Yeah, the way you were talking about Hamilton, I don't know if you even wait till the end of round two then. I think it sounds like a guy that I would take with the first pick. So many guys to take here. One of the things that jumps out to me looking at your list, Rob, is that, yes, wide receiver is stacked in every single round, but one of the stacked rounds that you have with one particular position is linebacker in round two.
Yeah, I've included, and people will notice this, you know, and people will ask, well, why have you got Kenneth Murray and Patrick Queen in round two? And I'm sure someone would ask, why have you got CD Lamb in round two? And, you know, personally, just I think with receivers, I want to know what I'm getting with if that makes sense, a receiver. And CD Lamb, a lot of his stuff is yards after the catch. He's a 4.50 runner, not a 4.4. I love the way that he sort of contorts his body and makes difficult grabs and stuff like that. But, you know, I have to see him at the next level to really buy into him. I think that he's a guy that's on the same par as a Justin Jefferson and a Jalen Reagor and a Brandon Ayuk. I don't think he's in the same bracket as a Ruggs and a Judy. So that's why I put him in round two. A lot of people will disagree, but, you know.
Well, and I think people get so caught up in the mock drafts and seeing guys in round in a certain spot in round one. And so I can see why someone who has been, you're just plugging away, looking at mock drafts, would kind of get that takeaway. The way that I took away how you built this list, and you could tell me if I'm wrong, but I was thinking from a Seahawks perspective, if those round one guys aren't there in round one, and yeah, you don't have 32 players in your round one bracket. So if none of those round one players are there, then you move back and you take picks in round two. And you see who's still left on the board. Yeah, a guy like Antoine Winfield might not be, or he might go in round one. Ezra Cleveland, he might even go in round one. CeeDee Lamb, you know, these are guys who could potentially go in round one, like DeAndre Swift and the quarterbacks. Holy smokes. So this doesn't necessarily mean this is the round that you think that they're going to go in. It's more of the value for the team.
Yeah, and I only had, I think, 18 players in the first round bracket. So I would probably have CD Lamb somewhere between 18 and 25,
yeah,
on a board. So he'll probably go 12, 13, 15. So it's not a massive difference, you know. That's enough about him. With the linebackers, Kenneth Murray and Patrick Queen fully deserve to go in round one. And I think Murray's going to go probably a bit earlier than people think because teams are going to love his personality, his story is unbelievable. With his adopted siblings, it's just incredible. He packs a punch. He's very athletic. He's very explosive. Modern day linebacker. So I think he's going to go very early. But there are aspects to his game which I also am a little bit worried about. Stack and shed. You can get into him. Missed tackles. You know, there are reasons not to have him as high as, like, I would have had Leighton Van Der Esch in round one, for example, mm-hmm. A few years ago, and loved him and thought, yeah, he was a top 15 pick. But I just think Murray's not as good as he is, so I want to put him in the round two bracket here. Same with Patrick Queen, you know, modern day linebacker, very quick, gets around the field, but there's not quite enough there to me and think, oh wow, you know, he's Leighton Van Der Esch. So again, not going to go in round one. Willie Gay Jr. is somebody I've liked for a long, long time. Just a playmaker, forced fumbles, interceptions, sacks, can blitz, can cover. He's amazing in coverage. I just think the upside is unbelievable. He's going to go in the top 40 for me. I think that teams are going to look at this guy and think he's incredible. And then the other thing is that his physical profile, I think I mentioned this last time, he had the same 40 as Bobby Wagner. He has the same size as Bobby Wagner. He had the same vertical jump, broad jump as Bobby Wagner. And the difference between Bobby Wagner's short shuttle and three cone and Willie Gay's is 0.02 seconds. So they're basically the same person physically.
Yeah.
So if you want to give yourself a chance to draft a Bobby Wagner type athlete, that's Willie Gay Jr.
Well, and I know we haven't talked a lot about Spark, Rob, but when you look at the Spark scores for linebackers, Willie Gay is right there next to Isaiah Simmons.
Yeah, that's the kind of athlete we're talking about. He's going to go very early, Willie Gay. He's kind of flown under the radar because he didn't play much in 2019. But anybody who watched Mississippi State in 2018 to watch Montez Sweat, Jeffrey Simmons, Jonathan Abram, they'll have seen Willie Gay jumping off the screen over and over and over again. And, you know, I was writing about him a year ago. I put him in my watch list right at the end of the last draft, you know, a year ago, and said, look, keep an eye on this guy. I just think he's amazing. And then, you know, talking of amazing linebackers, Logan Wilson is right up there as well. Much more athletic than people realize. 3-year captain at Wyoming. Aggressive, you know, amazing in coverage. Loads of interceptions. Gets to the perimeter, defends all that stuff in space really well. Gets off blocks, sheds blocks really well. Whoever gets Logan Wilson, I think he's going to go in the top 60. Whoever gets Logan Wilson is not going to regret that pick. You know, he's a Sean Lee type player, but without some of the injury concerns that Sean Lee had. And I think, you know, Bobby Wagner and Sean Lee in round two again this year, you know, you're going to get some tremendous value at the linebacker position in round two.
All right, Rob. Well, as we're closing this up, I want to know from you, are you a guy who gets just an idea in your mind for what you think that the Seahawks should do and then, you know, kind of base how you feel after the draft on what they do? Or do you just kind of take it with an open mind and then kind of evaluate afterward?
It's quite an interesting question because I think what I've tried to do is try to look at as many players as possible who fit the kind of things that they look for. And then I like it when they pick players that I feel like we've covered, because the point on the blog really is just to enhance the experience of the draft, so that when the Seahawks draft a player, if we've talked about them, you know, whoever's on the community and reads the blog regularly will go, I know him, he does this well, and he maybe doesn't do this as well, but we can do this, or this is the kind of player that he is, this is what we're getting with this guy. And that's why, you know, like a year ago, I was reading it back today, actually, the sort of the last piece I wrote was players they could target in the draft. And, you know, LJ Collier was there and Marcus Blair was there and DK Metcalf was there. And I was like, yeah, do you know what? That's fine. If they take three players in this draft relatively early who we've talked about either on a podcast or if I've written about them and people can feel like they've got some knowledge about that player, I'm content in terms of the coverage we've done. And then in terms of assessing the overall draft, then it's just about, you know, I think the way that I'm going to assess this draft after it's finished is with the knowledge that they're not anywhere close to being done. So whenever this draft's finished, they will need to go on, even if they sign a pass rusher in the first two rounds, they'll still need to go and do something else. There's still a lot of work to be done. So I will probably judge the picks, not on the where are the Seahawks now, how close are they to the Super Bowl immediately after this draft, but it will be what else do they need to do? How are they going to do it? And who are the players that they've specifically drafted? And I will get into that and we will assess that and I will look at these guys. I think my opinion on what they're actually going to do has probably changed 7 times today alone. You know, I can see them going offensive line early and getting a right tackle or even a potential future left tackle. I can see them tapping in. Look, they have very frequently gone after the best position in a draft early, and I could see them getting the receiver that they want with their first pick, but then I can also see a rush on receivers which could influence that. I can see them absolutely loving Jonathan Taylor and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and Jonathan Taylor may well not accept playing for any other team because he just seems to want to play for the Seahawks.
You think he makes that known in interviews? He's like, why are we even doing this? I'm a Seahawk already.
I'm a Seahawk. And then you've got, you know, the defensive players, and I could see them trading back for Josh Uche. So, you know, I've kind of run through these different scenarios. I know that kind of what people generally want at this time of year is they just want a definitive, this is my prediction, they're going to do this.
Right.
But I don't think I'd be doing it. I don't think I'd be doing you any justice by going, this is what they're going to do. I think that all of those options are on the table. They could trade down and get an Uche. They could draft Jonathan Taylor or Edwards-Helaire. They could go after a tackle or a receiver. You know, what I do feel confident in saying is that I know that the value for the defensive players is probably going to start at the end of that second round. And it may be that they stick a receiver in there somewhere as well. Tony Pauline thinks they're going to go very heavy on the trenches, O-line, D-line. That has to happen at some point. But, you know, the amount of work they've done on the offensive line so far, they might leave that to later on and focus on the D-line and skill positions. But I think what I will say is I think it's a good draft to go and get talent if you genuinely target the talent that's there and not aggressively feel like you've got to force needs.
Well, and that was part of the reason just of my question, because I feel like going into this draft, it's in one way, it's frustrating because you look at the Seahawks team and you say, I just see so many different spots where they have the ability to improve, which the frustrating part about that is that, yeah, you go into the draft knowing that you can't fill every need with a guy who can immediately come in and make you better. But there's so many spots where they have that potential. And that's why I think it can make you easily fall into that trap of, yeah, the Seahawks, they have to come away with a tackle who's going to be a future starter. Well, do they have to? Maybe not. So if you look at that, well, you know, weapons for Russell Wilson, you know, they have to find guys that can do that. Well, you know, they've done all right about going and shoot Jacksonville. They released one of their wide receivers. Is it Marquise Lee that they just released here? And that's a guy who we were talking about a year or two ago as a guy who could be available and be a target. So there's things that happen in the offseason, but I'm just excited to know that a week from now, Rob, we will be talking about who they have and what difference it could potentially make and what it means for the team.
I think it's funny, really, because you're absolutely right in what you say. And the Seahawks have got a lot of flexibility in this draft. You know, they can go in a number of different directions. They've got a few picks. You know, they've got three picks in the first two rounds and then another pick in the third round. And if they move around, they will acquire even more picks to be able to fill a lot of these areas that they need to address. But it's funny, actually, because I think the problem is that, and what is frustrating about it is they're not close to being a complete roster, even though they can address some of these needs and they've got the flexibility there. And they don't have to do this, they don't have to do that, they don't have to do the other. But they still aren't close to being a complete team in the way that, you know, I think the 49ers, for example, will probably come out of this draft feeling, yeah, do you know what, we've kind of got a champion, we've got the makeup of a championship team here. I mean, they got to the Super Bowl, so they're already there, but you know, they can replace DeForest Buckner, they can get a receiver, they can add a bit of talent, and they'll feel like those two first picks that they will inevitably turn into more picks, that they can come out of this feeling pretty
strong.
Are you
expecting them to draft a quarterback, Rob?
No, I think
I mean, just if we're talking about the 49ers being a complete team, I just had to go there.
Yeah, but and obviously that's, you know, the quarterback thing is, you know, thank goodness they didn't draft Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson when they took Solomon Thomas in hindsight, because if they had, then, you know, we'd be talking about a run similar to the Seahawks a few years ago, because they've got everything else. But they will feel like overall their roster is quite thick and talented. And the Saints are in a very similar position. You know, they will draft certain players and they will go into next season feeling like we've got quite a loaded roster here. And there are other teams who may feel like Dallas may feel that way. You know, I think they've got a few more issues than the two teams I mentioned before, but they also have a lot of talent and that's maybe just about hitting its stride. And then there are other teams too. You know, the Cardinals and the Rams are, you know, not going to go anywhere. The Falcons will try and get better. Tampa Bay, of course, are suddenly now, they've got Brady and Gronk, you know, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about the Gronk news, the fact that he now that the Patriots traded him away to the Bucks, and he's planning to return for 2020. Pretty wild.
I mean, that is going to be a film set type of situation in Tampa Bay all year. But you know, there are other teams that are going to that are going to feel more complete. I'd probably just rein it in as the first two I mentioned, the Saints and the Niners. And then the Seahawks kind of fit into that next tier, don't they, which is Green Bay and probably Tampa Bay now, and the Rams and other teams like that, that are kind of fit into that second tier. But in order to get to the first tier, they need more talent. You know, they probably need 3 or 4 players short still. I don't think they're going to be able to make up that gap in this draft and with the subsequent moves. So they may well need another offseason to get to that point, or they may need the Saints and the 49ers to withdraw back into the pack, which is certainly possible. But, that, you know, so they've kind of they've got the flexibility. They don't have any massive needs, but they've still got a lot to do, if that makes any sense again.
Well, going into Thursday, Friday, Saturday, is there anybody that you look at and you say that you have a high confidence in becoming a Seahawk? It almost sounds like you've put Jonathan Taylor in that category.
Well, you know, it's hard not to, you know, because he is everything that they pretty much look for: the yards after contact, the size, the speed, the playmaking, the touchdown making, explosive run. Everything about it is just Seahawks. And, you know, the fact that he's petitioning to join the Seahawks as well, it makes that. There are players that I really like in this draft. There are players that I can imagine fitting with the Seahawks. Devon Hamilton, I mentioned Leckie Fotu. I can easily imagine Josh Uche playing for the Seahawks. I can imagine Darrell Taylor playing for the Seahawks. I can anticipate Willie Gay playing for them. Or, you know, when you go around the offensive linemen, definitely could see Austin Jackson in there, or a Matt Peart, a Robert Hunt, who we talked about earlier on, Damian Lewis, the guard, you know, the running backs, the receivers we've already talked about, Lloyd Cushenberry, the center, Cesar Ruiz, Hunter Bryant, the tight end at Washington. You know, there are lots and lots of players that you could go, I can imagine them playing for the Seahawks. But, you know, when you actually bring it down to who are the guys that you definitely think are going to be on the team, you kind of do have to just go for who are the ones that tick every box. And that is, you know, that is Jonathan Taylor. That is, you know, some of these that have complete profiles. So it's probably like an Austin Jackson or an Isaiah Wilson. You know, they're the kind of guys that you think they really, really fit what the Seahawks look for. And Robert Hunt and people like that. So they're the kind of the names I would throw out there.
Rob, I really want to thank you for coming and spending so much time on the podcast throughout the off season. It's all going to pay off this week when I know 4 out of the 8 to 10 names at the Seahawks draft. That's going to win. It's ultimately going to be the big payoff for me.
Yeah, I hope so. Hopefully it's more than 4, but you know, if it's 3 or 4, then I feel like, yeah, it's served its purpose for another year.
Well, I'm going to be looking forward to checking out SeahawksDraftBlog.com as the picks start to roll in and start to hear what you think about each of those picks, Rob. Follow Rob on Twitter at Rob Staton. And before we get on out of here, I want to give everyone a reminder that you have until midnight Pacific time to go to tinypiecesofseahawksstuff.com and type in Go Hawks in the comment section. It's a random giveaway for a Russell Wilson rookie card with a tiny piece of Seahawks jersey in it. tinypiecesofseahawksstuff.com. While you're there, please consider supporting the show, getintheflock.com. And for those of you who are members of the flock, we're planning a first round draft event for Thursday, probably going to be a live stream to YouTube. That's exclusive for our members of the flock. Hopefully we'll have a way for you to dial in and we can chat during the draft on Thursday night, because I really want it to be a fun time. Regardless if the Seahawks trade out of the first round or if they make a selection. So look for that. If you are a member of the flock, I've sent out details in the email already. It's also posted at getintheflock.com. And I think that covers it all. So with that, I think there's only one thing left to say. Go Hawks!